your host of the Cutting Edge Podcast. This is a show where we talk transformation from every angle, body, mind, and confidence with a little sparkle and a whole lot of truth. I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Dr. Omar Betas, and the plastic surgery pro, and Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, our go-to therapist and mindset baby. Now, quick disclaimer, none of us are your doctor or therapist. We are just here sharing real talk, real stories, and real growth. So grab your protein shake, settle in, and let's get into it. This is The Cutting Edge.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy. And your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Welcome back to the Cutting Edge Podcast. I am your host, Mel. And today we have a great topic because there is a lot in this realm that I just don't know. And we were wondering, you know, like, what does everybody else know about this stuff? Because it's like the illegal procedures, like what are not and what are. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today, guys. We have our experts, of course, Dr. Betas and Mrs. Ashlyn Douglas Barnes. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Yes.
I think this is a very interesting topic because Dr. Betas had this specific patient today. We'll have you like walk us through this. And as soon as we got him, I'm like, we must talk about this. It comes up in therapy occasionally, but yeah. So tell us about your patient today.
Yeah.
So we had a lady. Yeah. So we had a lady. It is a very interesting case, and we don't come across them too often. Probably not a whole lot of surgeons who treat this particular problem. So very sweet patient. She unfortunately went overseas and had some, we're not really sure what she had injected. It looked like silicone once we kind of did the case. But she called it a biopolymer. And so she had that injected into her buttocks as kind of like a BBL many years ago. And so, you know, she came into the office about a month ago and was wanting a fix. You know, she complained of hardening of the tissue. She complained of some pain in certain spots, not all throughout, and just wanted an overall to kind of get rid of some of that stuff and also just an overall improved shape.
That must have been tough because I think as a consumer, if I didn't know a lot about this space, if someone said this is a biopolymer, I'd be like, wow, that sounds official. Just
sounds
like
fancy.
All of the mm-hmm. injections have other names, and like, how do we know if it's like illegal or real, or is there ever anything you can inject in the butt that is for volume that's appropriate?
So your own fat's always okay. Has to be your own. It can't be someone else's. It'll be rejected. And then there's a few, you know, FDA approved. There's fillers that are approved, right, for the face, FDA approved for the face. You can certainly use them in other parts of the body. It would take a lot of filler to do a BBL, so probably not cost effective. But is it dangerous or risky? Probably not. Again, it's not FDA approved for the buttocks, but you could use a filler in that area. The only other product, there was one called Renuva, R-E-N-U-V-A. I believe that's been taken off the market. That was what we call like an off-the-shelf fat. So it is fat that's been taken from someone else and processed and decellularized, and then you can use it and put it back into you. And it's okay.
Repurposed fat. I never thought we'd come to this day.
Where did it come from?
Another person.
Right, but how did they?
But it's processed.
But they like harvested it somehow?
They harvest it, yeah. They process it, they decellularize it. And so that's the reason your body won't reject it.
Can I be a candidate for this?
What is it called? No, I just want to see why they took it off the market. What is it called?
Renuva, R-E-N-U-V-A.
So they don't do this anymore.
But they, not this one. I'm going to get to the next one. But they couldn't take like fat from you, Mel, and give it to Ashlyn or, you know, whatever, vice versa. It has to be reprocessed and treated. So you can't be like, oh, I'm going to do it in one room and then just transfer it. It doesn't work that way.
Interesting. It says it is not off the market.
Oh, it's not? Okay. Maybe it's just fallen out of popularity. Because we don't really talk about it that much anymore. So the one that recently got FDA approval, probably about a year ago, I think it's been maybe a little bit over a year, late 2024, is called Alloclay. Alloclae. That's made by a company called Tiger Aesthetic.
Hey friends, this episode is sponsored by findabariatrictherapist.com because bariatric life is full of ups and downs and everything in between, but you don't have to go through it alone. Findabariatrictherapist.com makes it easy to connect with therapists who truly understand your journey, the mindset shifts, the identity changes, and all the real life challenges that come after surgery. Because therapy designed for bariatric patients changes everything. Visit findabariatrictherapist.com and find your support today.
I think is her name. And similar idea. It's decellularized fat. It's been processed. And then it comes in a syringe. You can take that off the shelf and inject it into a patient.
How much does that cost?
Ooh, good question.
Are we talking like 500, like a syringe of anything else or more or less?
No, it's less than that. I mean, it's much more cost effective than a filler. Like you could do a BBL with this. If someone had like really not a lot of fat, or maybe they have a little bit of fat and you want to mix some Alloclay in like a 50-50, or you want to just do all Alloclay.
Does it stay better than your own fat because it's decellular? Like if you're someone who's had a couple and your fat just isn't, like I have one client that like hers rejects a lot, so she's just not going to do it again.
We lost Mel. Rejects, well, I guess I'd have a lot of questions because fat, your own fat usually doesn't get rejected.
It doesn't stay. It looks really nice when she has surgery and then it's gone down twice.
Yeah, usually there's probably a combination of maybe poor harvesting, meaning the liposuction, poor processing, meaning what you do between the time you take it out and then you put it back in, poor injection technique. It could be something in the patient, like maybe she has some autoimmune condition or some, you know, is she smoking? Is there some kind of extrinsic factor they're not considering? And then lastly, I guess this goes back to one of the first three, but the site you're putting it in. For example, the face does a lot better than other body parts. The butt does very well because it's a very large area. The breasts typically don't do well because they're not fatty. There's some glandular tissue. I think we might have talked about this on a previous episode. But breasts are probably the worst area for fat transfer. Mm. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. And I would say it could be one or a combination of these why she's not successful. And a lot of plastic surgeons do fat transfer, but I would say not a lot are very versed in the kind of biomechanics and things on a cellular level. So I think if you see someone who you would want to see someone who does a lot of it or kind of has studied it. I was very fortunate at Pitt. Peter Rubin is the guy I trained with, and he has one of the largest like adipose stem cell labs. So he's like a master at fat transfer and studying fat cells and fat cell stem cells. I mean, fat cells have a lot of stem cells as well, right? For fat transfer. So I do a lot of fat transfer, and I think
I was just going to say. So, anyone listening, if you want a fat transfer, you need to come see Dr. Bates.
Yes, it sounds slow. I didn't get to hear all of that, but it sounds like you know all of the things, Dr. Bates. So did I come in right when you were saying like, so you know the person that's like the main guy that does that?
Well, Peter Rubin has at Pitt, they have this giant research lab, and his focus for 20 years has been stem cells and adipocytes, because your adipocytes actually have the highest concentration per like area of stem cells. And so that's been his area of research, and that's where I did my fellowship. So, you know, and I think one of the things, so I was going to get to this, but we'll skip ahead. So one of the things they're studying is potentially harvesting fat from someone, right? Injecting maybe some then, and then maybe if you need some in 3 months, maybe you run out of space, right? So a lot of times you do a BBL and you put as much fat as you can, and you have extra and you can't use it then because you've kind of maximized the space I try not to waste any. So if that happens for my patients, I'll usually put it in the breasts, put it in the hands, put it in a muscle, something to give them definition. But if you still have extra left over, one of the things they're researching is actually freezing that fat or storing it somehow. It doesn't have to be freezing. And then you can use it at a later date. So that's something what? Ongoing now in terms of research development. Yeah. And I believe they're looking at that at Pitt. So they've got some really cool research projects.
That's interesting. I know someone who's really self-conscious about their hands, and I never thought like a fat transfer might help, because it's not the look, it's not the skin. It's like how her hand looks. And I'm like, yeah.
Is it too bony or something?
I think she feels it looks like mine kind of has that look to some degree, like where it's like very like thinned and you can see. Like, I was just thinking, like, oh, maybe if you
that's a youthful hand, that's typically what you want.
Yeah.
People fat graft their hands when they're older, usually, and you start to get some wrinkly skin, right? And then you can fill the wrinkles with fat, and then it doesn't look so aged anymore.
So when you would do the 360 lift, when you do the B, because the BBL will be with that, right?
Mm-hmm. It have to be, but yes, we always do the BBL with it.
Okay, so do they get to actually like dictate how big you like, will you be like, we can make it bigger? Like we can do some stuff with your fat and move it around. Like,
what do we do? Yeah, I would say yes and no. I mean, I think most patients come and they've seen my Instagram. And so, you know, they know we're not making like, Kim Kardashian butts. I tell them it's mostly for shaping, but if you want, some patients come in and say like, put everything you can in, right? So then certainly we can oblige. But you do get to a point where you just can't put any more because you run out of space, at least in one session, right? You can always come back and do it again. But in one session, there is a maximum amount that you can put in, because if you start with an area this big, this is all the space you have to put fat. So you're not going to like quadruple this area in size. Maybe you can double it or maybe triple it. And eventually it just can't stretch anymore. So.
Cool. Then I can get a fat butt.
I think you could.
I think I could. I think, why not? I have the fat to do it. Pull it out of my thighs, man. Like, let's go. Is there a spot that you won't take fat out of?
I mean, feet and hands are probably one I've never taken fat out of.
Okay.
But there's like hardly any fat there anyway. It's really just skin and muscle. So yeah, I mean, pretty much everywhere else we have.
Because you could take my back fat and put it in my butt.
Correct. And usually, I mean, and this was something we talked about during this case today, is a lot of a BBL, and I tell this to all my patients, because they're always like, I want like, you know, X number of CCs. And I'm like, it's not about, a lot of a BBL is not actually how much you put in. We might have talked about this on another episode. It's carving out the lower back, right? So if you look at the back from the side, you want this nice kind of...
How many cc's of fat? I don't have an eye for that. I have no idea.
Yeah, some people, I mean, it's like implants though, right? People are like, I want a 400. It's like, you don't even know what 400 means.
Right, you don't know what that means about you. I don't know. That just makes me laugh.
Yeah, like my friend has 400, I want 400.
Right.
But a BBL, a lot of the shape you get is not by putting fat in. If this is lower back, it's actually by carving this out. And usually right above the butt. And Mel, this might be the area you're speaking of, right above, if your buttocks is here, right above the butt, there's this area that's just very resistant to weight loss. It's just like a stubborn pocket of fat. Most people, men have it too, not just women. And so that area is great to harvest and also contour. And then you put the fat basically below.
Yeah, I need that too.
Well, because like I already have, like I have the dip in, and it's interesting because like, the way that I see my butt, it's like it's bubbled on the underneath and on the top. Like I got like the round, but then it's just like flat. It's like, it's a little flat. It's like you can see a little bit of a flat part, but everything else is round. So I'm like, oh, he can just heighten what's already there. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go. I mean, I'm working on my butt right now anyways. So I'm trying to get an Anna butt. If Anna Banana, if you're listening, I'm trying to get my butt like over here. She already messaged.
Is that the?
She messaged me and told me all the things that she does. You want to see? Let's see.
Shout out to Anna Banana.
Anna Banana. She's even in my phone as Anna Banana. Let's see. Okay, she says heavy squats, hip thrusts, and Bulgarian split squats.
What I don't even know what that is.
You'd recognize it if you saw it.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, how do I... But it's really the hip thrust. The hip thrust at the gym, I'm like using theirs. I'm like, oh, this is good. It really made my butt sore. I was like, this works, guys. So guys, just work out your butt a lot and then go see Dr. Bates and get it filled. Same.
With legal substances. Like, yes. Own fat.
No, what is that stuff that people were doing in Miami?
Silicone.
Where they filmed, not just silicone, it was cement, silicone.
Ooh, there was cement, yeah.
Ooh, yeah, cement. And wasn't there like, you know, like the filler for your house, like the insulation?
Yes, that like foam.
Didn't
stuff.
A few people die from that too?
Sure they did if that was injected. That can't be good.
I mean, so how do they know, like, okay, so if they're going somewhere, like, out of the country first, and then we'll do in the country. So out of the country, what are we looking for to make sure that they have, like, good quality grade stuff to put in you?
Oof.
Like, how do we...
Good question.
Like, I mean, how do we even ask,
like,
too?
It's the Wild West.
Yeah, it's like, how do we even ask that
question? Yeah, because, like, that one lady came, she thought she was probably getting something that sounds very scientific.
I think really the only things that are FDA approved would be in the US. Again, outside of the country, I think you've just, I mean, I think no matter where you go, you have to ask, like, what are you doing my BBL with? Okay. It's either got to be your own fat or fat off the shelf. I hate to say that term, but I mean, those
I
are
love
kind
it
of the
though.
Two things.
Okay.
Those are kind of the two things that are safe and accepted. Okay. Anything else? And then, you know, the third, it's not an injection though, would be a butt implant, right? Just like they have breast implants, they have butt implants as well. That is a silicone implant, but it's not a silicone injection. They're not injecting like liquid silicone, oh, okay. Like probably what this lady had. Yeah.
So with the lady, did it make that capsule thing on her butt? Like, did that happen to her?
No. So the problem with, so you would get that with an implant, right? Like right. One object. The problem with these injections, and this is why it becomes a problem over time, is you have basically multiple little nodules, right? They can be very, very small. They can be large depending on how much kind of a bolus or how much was actually deposited in each specific area. And then your body does form tiny, tiny capsules around, you know, like small capsules around each of those little nodules. But it just creates this huge inflammatory response because instead of like one large implant that has one capsule around it, now you've got these like thousands of trails of these things. Sometimes they're like a little string. Sometimes it's just, like I said, multiple little nodules. And your body's trying to close them all off and wall them all off. And at the end of the day, it's a liquid. So it kind of just is, it's not a liquid. It's like a gel. Okay. And so you get this like gel-like, and it's very difficult for the body to close it off. And so that's why you get some of those color changes. It can lead to pain because your body is just constantly trying to get rid of this thing, but it can't push it out. It's just stuck in between the tissues. And then you get scar tissue hardening. And it's this vicious cycle.
Was her butt hard? Like, not
parts of it were. Yeah. Not hard. I've seen ones, I wouldn't say rock hard, but I've seen ones where like it's, you know, firm. It almost feels like you're hitting like bone, like you're hitting your arm, but it's the buttock, whoa, for example. So hers wasn't too bad.
What would cause that? Like, what was yours that you were working on?
What would cause that?
Yeah, the one that you're saying that, like, it felt like a bone.
Oh, that was just a lot of silicone, right? I mean, you put a lot of silicone in, you're just going to increase that reaction, you know, 5, 6, 10-fold.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think of that. I wouldn't want a rock hard butt.
No, it's not rock hard at first, right? So I think for a few years, people are like, oh my God. And it's especially when you first wake up or for the first few weeks, you're like, oh my God, I didn't have a butt. I have a great shape now. I like it. Even a BBL at first is hard because you've expanded a space, right? And it just feels firm. But over time, that your body incorporates your own fat and it softens and it starts to look normal and round. With silicone, it's probably hard at first. Maybe it does soften a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to get worse as the scar and inflammation starts to take place.
I wonder too if for some people, because of that period of time where everything was so great, told and encouraged others to get it too.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then there's some, like, that's part of the cycle that you get into is, I knew someone who had it and they had great success, so I got it, but it wasn't far enough out to start having problems to know it was a problem.
Yeah, we, I mean, I would say we don't see too many of those cases in recent times. Like, I can't remember the last time someone walked in, one of these types of patients walked in and said, like, I had this done 5 years ago. Not that that means it's not still being done, but most of them, this was like something that was 15, 20 years ago or more. But it, I have had some patients from the United States where this happened. As you guys said earlier, it's sometimes, it's usually a liquid silicone, but it can be other things.
So what is, when you talk to these patients, what's making them wait so long to see you?
I think, you know, it could be a little bit of maybe helplessness, embarrassment, not sure what to do, not sure if there is a solution. Some of it could be financial. I mean, these are not cheap problems to fix. They're definitely expensive. They take a lot of time in the operating room, sometimes multiple surgeries. Certainly the silicone also, I always tell patients, at least, there's no guarantee to take it all out. I mean, certainly if they went in the muscle, we're not digging inside the muscles to get this stuff out. And without, like, this patient's case, for example, we used some vaser and then liposuction to get some of this stuff out, but there's never a guarantee that we get it all. So I always have patients, we kind of map out together, like, where is the area that bothers you the most? And we kind of map that out on the morning of surgery. We do the vaser to try to break it up. We try to use ultrasound, or any kind of other imaging that we have, available to us. And then we try to suck as much of those nodules out. And then we want to put some fat back in to kind of replace it. But it's impossible without kind of wedging this area out and kind of two cuts and taking out a piece, to get the silicone nodules out entirely. So that's something they do have to live with, unfortunately, for the rest of their lives. Our goal is to try to make them better.
Well, and what sucks is a lot of people are going to the other stuff to make things, like, you know, cheaper. And mm-hmm. in the long right. run, you're actually not, because these things will happen in 10 to 15 years, 20 years. And now you're going in and it's a way more expensive because all the stuff you have to do. Like, for you to get the silicone out of the butt just sounds like that takes a while.
Yeah. How long was the one you did today?
It was about a 4.5 hour case. We did lipo on the front as well, so that adds time, right? If we had just done the back, it probably could have been like a 2.5-3 hour surgery.
Okay. And how is she doing? Do we know she's all good to go?
We are seeing her tomorrow. She went home, and then we'll see her in the office tomorrow.
Yay! That's exciting.
Yeah, so hopefully she's doing well.
What other injections are out there that we should be aware, like, oh, to avoid? Because I've heard of the Botox parties, you know, I've heard of the B12 shot parties. what should we be, like, red flag? Maybe we shouldn't be at these parties.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you ask me, any of these parties are, unless they're in a medical office, like, you shouldn't be getting Botox. And Botox is pretty benign, but you shouldn't be getting Botox at someone's house, right? Like, that's probably illegal. It's actually very illegal.
Okay.
To get those kind of treatments in a non-healthcare setting.
All right, people, you hear that? Hear that?
So even if the person is licensed who is doing it, it is unlicensed activity because it's in an unsterile situation, or it's just
not a clinical setting? Yeah, I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain it's illegal. Right. Certainly unethical. To be doing that kind of stuff in a non-healthcare setting. I'm sure you're violating some rule. Maybe it's different state by state, but I can't imagine it's legal to go out and, like, inject someone with Botox. And again, Botox is fairly benign. Chances are very low that something's going to happen. But it is not a sterile place. Like, yeah, sure, you can bring the alcohol swabs and whatever. But filler, for example, terrible.
Oh, I mean, yeah, filler, I've heard of filler parties too.
Filler party, I mean, that's... If it's not illegal, it's very unethical. Because if you have a problem with a filler, you know, one of the things that can happen with filler is what we call a vascular occlusion. If you've looked this up, you know, you can basically block an artery And that can cause necrosis. I think, Mel, you were asking about that earlier. And one of the worst complications, again, these we're talking about very rare things, but not something I would want to risk doing at someone's house. And then, you know,
right?
In front of a judge, you're like, why are we doing this in someone's house? And, you know, that's like, you can't defend that.
You're like,
one of the worst complications is blindness, right? So you don't want to be doing this in someone's house. Because if some of these things happen, they probably don't have the meds that they need on site in your house in their bag or purse to treat that complication. Definitely would not recommend doing any kind of healthcare treatments at home. That person is either breaking the law or at minimum doing something unethical.
Okay. So people, don't be doing these at the houses. Have the party at the clinic.
Party at the clinic. Yes.
Yep. Get a sterile room. Just keep rotating to get your fillers. Because that is scary. Could you imagine? I would feel, one, if I was a hostess, oh boy, I would feel Lord so blind. Bad. Woo! Going blind.
Do you really have a studio in a house that you, like, is it generally a red flag if someone's, like, office is in their house or they're doing this out of their house? Could that be a...
Do they have a certification? Like a... Not their certification. Like, do they have a license to operate out of their household? I'm guessing.
Because I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever... Sometimes therapists work out of their houses, but obviously we're not medical.
But that's different. Yeah, you're not administering medication.
Because to me, maybe that's a red flag too. If you're like showing up at someone's house and they're like... Because I think of like the dentist that got... arrested down here that was from another country, and it was out of his
I do remember that.
Yeah, it was out of his garage, and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm pretty sure you can't have a dentist in a garage, so that would be like a red flag. Even if it was a beautiful garage, you can't have a dentistry in a garage. So I'm trying to think too, like, if someone says, oh, I like operate a filler, like I'm, you know, licensed in this, but I do it out of my house, like that may be a red flag.
I would ask them for their like healthcare whatever license, you know, like, where's your healthcare occupancy license? I bet they don't have one if that's the case, because I doubt, like, these things have to be certified by some commission, and I doubt a commission is going to certify you on like some mixed use residence and office space, kind of like the dentist.
Oh my god!
You know, that's like,
what could be things that someone could immediately be like, where it's not. Yeah.
I would say, like, if you're getting meds in the house, bad idea. It's like very different. Like, I can do virtual consults from home. That's one thing. But to have someone come in to inject them to my house, probably, yeah, definitely not okay.
Right. Yeah. We can't go in your garage and give me a, you know, butt lift. No. And people, like, it is, I know, like, people don't like confrontation. And so if they show up somewhere, they might be really nervous to even ask for a license or ask for these things. But remember, like, it's your body and your money. So,
and your health. Yeah.
And your health, guys. So, yeah, definitely don't feel ashamed to ask these things. They're very important to know.
Because I do think there's like two groups of people that we're potentially talking about. I think there are some that like outrightly know it's illegal, it's not right. Like the way that they met the person or the situation, it's just like that's very known. But I also think there's a group of people who just didn't know. Like, I would imagine the lady, even today, that sound a polymer, sure, why not? I don't know what botulism is in Botox. It sounds kind of crazy, but we were all like, Botox good, you know. So I would assume maybe she fell more into that second category where she thought it was somewhat legitimate, or, you know. But I've ran into someone who part of what they didn't seek out treatment for is because they knew through the drug dealer, that's how they met the person that did the silicone. Like, she knew 100% it was illegal and not good. And that's actually part of the shame, because she's like, okay, if the surgeon asked me, well, how did you meet this person? Or what qualifications did this person have? She 100% knew. And that's actually part of what prevented her from getting care for a long time. Cause she's like, I have to explain this whole other life I had and why I was involved in that. And like how all that happened. And that actually was part of what prevented her from getting care.
Oh, that sucks.
I mean, that's an interesting situation. I'm sure you're right. There are some people who have that feeling. I think at the end of the day, some doctors probably won't ask that many questions.
Okay.
Some might, but yeah, I think you have to as a patient, you have to realize we're asking out of trying to find out more information on what exactly was done. I mean, like this patient, for example, when she told me biopolymers, I tried to get more out of her, like what exactly, and that's all she knew. She was like, I don't know. I was told it was a biopolymer. And, you know, I told her more than likely it was just silicone. And I think, again, after seeing it today, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. But it's not in a way of trying to shame or guilt or say like, well, that was, you know, I would never be like, that was stupid. And certainly, I think if you have doctors out there who are doing that, which I would, unfortunately, you know, not everyone's the same. I wouldn't be shocked if someone says that, then that's probably not the right doctor for you.
Right,
so,
yeah. I would leave right away. Run. Yeah.
Because I think, too, it's just for her to have to relive and think about, like, where she was in her life that she would even seek that out. It's just that, you know, the whole lifestyle, there was people that were probably, and, you know, we talked about that drug dealer that was doing this probably was preying on these women because they knew the line of work they were in and that would be a positive for that line of work. And so it was this like, you know, this cycle of, well, I may have to explain, you know, what my line of work was then and kind of right. All of the things that go with that. And maybe not just the judgment of the doctor themselves, but them having to go back and kind of relive and what had happened and how they found themselves there.
Yeah, because, like, these women that have, it's not all women, obviously, but there's women out there that, like, that was their lifestyle, and they did it so that way they could have better lives. And so, just know, like, that's fine. And, again, don't be ashamed about it, because, like, everybody has a past, everybody has things that they're not proud of, but, like, your health, again, and we're just going to keep, like, nailing it down, is number one. So, you know, if you don't want to talk about how all the things happen, just be like, this is just what I know, you know. Mm-hmm. Or write it down. I know we talked about that in another episode. Mm-hmm. If you're uncomfortable, write it down and then give it to your doctor, so that way you don't have to say it out loud, because saying it can be a little more scarier. But they've seen everything, though. Like, I'm sure they've seen so many different walks of life, I don't think anybody's gonna shock them at this point, especially plastic surgeons, you know, like,
where did the silicone actually come from? Like, they just got vials of silicone and then put it in a, or it was like made into a solution. Like, where were they
getting it from?
Yeah. What, yeah, is
like,
it?
How,
like,
does that work?
Medical grade? Is it like,
I have no idea. Yeah. To be honest, I have no idea where people get the silicone from.
Cause is there a legit business out there that was making some kind of polymer that they even were selling as like a medical grade thing, and then the surgeon bought into that it was a medical grade thing?
I doubt that I hope surgeons aren't silly or dumb enough to believe that there's, you know, injectable medical grade silicone out there. I think all doctors know that that's not real. The only medical grade silicone we use is like scar stuff. That's the only, and it's on, that's the outside, on the outside, right? Or, you know, or breast implants, but we're not injecting that. Yeah, I don't know where they get this stuff. I mean, I don't know if like the stuff you like use in your bathroom, right, or like in your kitchen to caulk stuff, that can be silicone, I think, sometimes. So I don't know if that's something similar that they're using.
Ooh, no.
Like if they're getting it at the like Home Depot. I'm speculating here, so I have no idea where people get the stuff from.
We call that bathtub medicine. That's what that is.
Yeah, because I would imagine too, if I walked in and I saw vials that kind of look like, I don't know, vials.
But you're probably asleep at that point, right? Or you're face down, or you're not seeing, they're not pulling. I mean, I hope if you have a chance to see it, you're like, stop, like, let me off the table. But I'm guessing that stuff comes out after you're asleep or face down. Or
Oh, for sure. If I was one that was being a bad person, it would not be for you. Because
I watched something, like, I think it was on Vice or something, and the like person was going through and they were like, he was injecting. They're like, what is it? He's like, I don't know. But it was like in vials. That was the weird thing. I was like, I wonder what it was. Like, it looks,
when you can transfer anything from one vial, you know, from one, right, container, but I mean, they, to a vial.
That's true. So I guess they put the silicone from Home Depot like in a tub, and then like, I don't,
you're
know,
not using the little gun with the little pointy thing. And
I mean, I can't imagine.
Have you seen those guns? Have you ever?
Yes, but like, do you think they're just like, they made a hole and then they are putting that in there,
injecting it into a syringe, and then you cap the syringe and start injecting. Possible.
I'll just send you. It's an interesting video that I watched. I'll send it to you. I think it was by Vice. was like an underground, like a bunch of underground stuff. And it was just like talking to the girl that was getting it done, but also the guy that was doing it.
I'm going to look it up now.
Say, there's this show that I watch.
I think it's on Vice.
I want to say it's Black Beauty.
That was a horse show, wasn't it?
It was. Okay, phone. I get it. I wrote it wrong. Thank you. Beauty in Black. So there's a drama series on Netflix, and that's where I was seeing they're showing the injections of the insulation into the ladies' booties that were strippers. Like, they would talk them into it, and then they would go take them to a motel, and then some ladies would die, and some ladies wouldn't die. Mm. It's really freaking crazy, but I'm sure that, like, that has to happen. Like, it's
crazy. Yeah, it might not have been Vice. We'll have to... Oh, maybe...
Called Black and Beauty in the... Beauty in Black?
Yeah, Beauty in Black.
Like Black Beauty, which was, I believe, in the 90s.
It was a 1994 film for racing. Yeah.
Oh, it was a show or a
movie? It was a TV. It was a film. Yeah. You're right.
Film. Okay.
Because it came up as I was taping it. I know. I know. What was it? Something came out in 94 and someone's... Oh, it was Matt Rife. I was watching on Kill Tony and he says, he's like, oh my God, that happened in 95. And he's like, I wasn't even born yet. And I'm like, fuck you, Matt Rife. Oh, like, shut up right now. Like,
we have one of our scrub techs. She's really sweet. She's born in like 2002 or something, 2001. I don't know. God. I'm like, I can't even have a conversation with someone who's born in the 2000s.
I know, right? It's
and we'll talk about something and we'll look at her. I'm like, were you even born then? And she's like, no.
Nope. No. Well, I'm learning that it's just wild. This is going to be totally wild for the podcast guy. What was that?
I think I found it.
That was scary.
That was the, yeah, they altered the voice so the man could talk. All right, let me see.
I'm like Bane from Batman.
Yes, it was,
How did you get louder? You didn't even move.
Yeah, I think it was this one. It's called... Close. Killer Curves. It's on BET.
Killer Curves.
Bodies to Die For.
Because people have really...
It was a really interesting documentary. Because again, it's like, I'm always curious from like the mental health side of things. Like, how do we find ourselves here? Right. So like, how do you find yourself in with some random, like even the dentist in the, like, I get how you end up in the dentist in the garage, right? You have dental things that you need, that you are desperate and you're in pain and you don't have the means to do it. And someone says, hey, I use this guy and he's a dentist down in whatever country he's from. So he's totally legit. I've had all this work done. He's done a great job. You should go see him.
Yep.
And they say, okay. So I think there are women in women's circles that are like, I'm really self-conscious, but I can't afford to get a fix. And someone's like, hey, like I had this guy and he did these injections and don't worry, it's polymer. It's right. Biopolymer. And that sounds scientific, I guess. And they're like, look, it looks really good. It feels right because at this point nothing's happened. And like I get how people then they're like, oh no, like something's going wrong, and I've helped other people also have access to this, and so now I feel guilt about that. And you know, I thought it was something that was legal, normal,
and
so I think biopolymer, since you brought it up again, and this is what the lady told me she had injected, right? It was a biopolymer. I mean, you break that word down, that doesn't mean anything like that should go in the body. It can, but it doesn't mean... Polymer is just a chain of something repeated, right? Going back to science. And bio just means biologic. So, right. Like... Mm-hmm.
But people who aren't in this all day, every day, I don't know. Botulism sounds bad, but that's Botox.
Yes, exactly. True. But I would not, if someone's saying they're injecting a biopolymer, that's probably not, like, that shouldn't be a green flag right away. I wouldn't say it's immediately a red flag, but don't take that as like, oh, great, that sounds legit. Let's put this in me.
Well, in my head, that sounds like a freaking car. Like a motor oil. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't.
It could be. I don't know if oil is a polymer. Maybe it is. It's a bunch of carbon.
I think there is a polymer. Yeah, I think it is. But anyways, what, like, have you, okay, so now we've covered fillers, Botox, injectables. Is there anything else out there that, like, is there a surgery that people aren't supposed to be getting, but people are getting, like, that's illegal to do? Like,
illegal surgery? I don't think so.
Just, it better be not again in a garage. Like,
it's not in a garage. Be careful who does it, even if it's in a hospital. Well, not in a hospital. In a hospital, you're usually pretty safe. If it's in a surgery suite, you know, a lot of people cut corners. A lot of people, you know, sterilization is big, right? I mean, people are operating on you on your in an open body, and the risk of infection if you're not at an accredited center, all those things. But in terms of illegal, I don't think there's any other illegal operations out there.
You get your ribs removed in the United States. I know a lot of people go overseas for that, but I know maybe more it's just looked down upon or like unnecessary. But like, is that legal?
I don't think it's illegal. I think, but I do think if you're looking at that, the kind of in the last 5 or 10 years, data has shown that you can get essentially the same result without removing the rib by just contouring the rib. And removing is very risky.
Training in shaving ribs, which I feel like is different than breaking or removing ribs.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what shaving would do. It's not really going to contour the shape a whole lot, right? I mean, your ribs are only about this thick. So if you shave like that much, now you're down to here. It hasn't really brought your waist in. The reason removing or breaking an infra, you know, you kind of like shape them when you break them, is that you're removing either this part and now this kind of just falls. The soft tissues just fall over where the rib was. Or you're breaking this and then bending it in, and now you can narrow the waist. You can narrow the angle of this of the ribs here.
Does that make your ribs weaker technically? Because, like, say if you fell, are you more likely to break where you have like broken?
So they're weaker while they're healing, but then once they're healed, which takes about 6 to 8 weeks, they're, you know, just as strong as your natural ribs. And then, you know, one thing to keep in mind is it's not a break in the typical sense of, and it's not as painful because of this reason, right? So usually if you fall, like you hit something or you're in a car accident and you break your ribs, it breaks kind of in an asymmetric way, like it might break like this. Whereas in surgery, we make a nice clean cut and then we just shift it and then it just heals back in that clean cut. So it's not like broken in some awkward way and twisted and all that. So it's actually very, it's a lot more, I don't know, move. How do I word this? It's less painful than a break where you actually like break it against the hard object. Okay. It's a controlled fracture. Yeah.
Kind of like with when people have nose jobs and they break the nose and they're not like breaking it to break it. They're like reshaping.
They are breaking it. Yeah. But they are, but it's, again, it's a controlled fracture. Same with like, in a lot of these, you get into like elective surgery, right? Like limb lengthening. If you've ever heard of that, you go in and you break the tibia and the fibula. And you start to kind of like distract them, meaning make a nice clean cut across both bones. And then you have this device that goes on both and it starts to just slowly stretch the bones apart. And then the bones heal in between. They kind of form new bone.
That's wild.
That's painful.
That sounds painful.
I know someone who's done it and they said it was worth it, but still like the most painful experience in their lives.
But I have to, I know it sounds wild, but I think people have all kinds of insecurities. And I think probably more men than women have insecurities about their height.
Yes.
And so I definitely have talked to clients that are considering or thinking about it and thinking like, is this as wild as someone getting a boob job or someone getting their calves implanted or, you know, all that. And I definitely can understand where that insecurity comes from surrounding, particularly maybe being a man in the United States who's short, where you would maybe, does anyone do that in the United States? It's mostly, I know like Turkey is like a big place for it now. I think Turkey has just become the come over for your hair transplant. By the way, we do limb lining. I think it's also just a lot of male focused things.
Yes, because they can do other
there's
things.
There's a few people in the US. There's a, I think there's a big guy, a big center in New York that does it. And I'm sure there's people in California. And I would say it's along the same lines. I mean, don't get me wrong. The recovery is much worse than a breast augmentation. The recovery is miserable for this. And you wear a device for usually weeks to months because, you know, you don't just go from like, no, you know, you don't break and go here. You break and every day there's a little bit of use that device. You turn it and it separates about a millimeter a day. And I think there's a max, don't quote me, but it might be like 1 or 2 centimeters that you can lengthen to allow the bone gap to fill in. So if you do a millimeter a day at a centimeter, you're looking at 30 days of wearing that device and distracting. Then you have to go in, you get it taken off. It's not a fun process. So you really got to be committed to it.
Stay within like care for much longer than you would for any kind of plastic surgery.
Probably.
Yeah.
And the healing is a long time.
Jesus. Well, guys, don't get your limb stuff done either in a garage. Let's just.
Do not. Yeah, that's.
You know what? Just get your hair done in a garage. That's fine. Get your feet done. Nails. Not
legal in Florida, but.
Whatever like, state.
My last lady, before she like went into early retirement, it took so long to get her space certified that she, because she had specifically bought a house that had a studio, and she literally would not do anything in that space until it got approved. But it took so long for the city of Orlando to go and like check a box that she had water and a bathroom and an exit and a place for us to park. And part of it was like certifying she knew she was doing. But I'm like, if this is what we're doing just to get lashes done, I can't imagine.
Right.
Medical.
Seriously. Yeah. Seriously. Well, is there anything like from your side, Ashlyn, where like people come in and been like, what do I do? How do I talk to people?
Yeah,
like,
I think more kind of what I talked about a little, or just it had more to do what was going on, either their what was going on in their life at the time that it happened.
Okay.
Or how was I so stupid? And what I work with them is like, we're not medical. Polymer, whatever the word like sounded medical to you. I can understand why that sounded fine. I'm not in, like, I don't work in plastic surgery. So,
yeah,
like, there's an aspect of, like, you were probably tricked. And, like, sometimes we have to work through, like, how was I so stupid? And we have to kind of think about, like, who was preying on you and kind of, like, how you found yourself in that situation and probably process some grief around that you were taken or, like, you could be tricked. Like, that I think comes through.
Yeah, being duped sucks. Because then you do feel stupid. You're just like, how did I... Like, what did I not see? You know?
Yeah. So. And I think in therapy, sometimes that's, we have to work through that part. And then you feel more comfortable to be like, okay, well, now I need to go see a doctor about it. And then we work through that. But I think the majority of it is like, I was just in a time in my life where, like, I don't want to have to go back and live that and think of that. And, but I'm in pain every day. So, like, I probably need to. Similarly, like, I got a tattoo when I was 14 on the floor of someone's bathroom, and I'm very thankful that I don't have hepatitis, but, like, when people ask me about my tattoo, I kind of have to explain a story, and they're like, well, you probably lived another life, and I'm like, yeah. So, I have a little bit of, like, around that, right? So, I'm happy I didn't get hepatitis. Did I know better at 14 not to get a tattoo on someone's floor? Probably. But, like, you know, I kind of can relate to that idea of, like, I should have known better, or... You know, like,
and I can't talk, girlfriend. I got the one behind my ear, Miss Waddles, in a kitchen, and it was like, I was like 26, so it's fine.
Yeah, I call that 14, my prison 26. It was made in the same way that a prison tattoo was made, from what I remember.
I had to hurt,
but again, like when I have processed that part of my life. Why were those adults with me at 20, you know, at 14? Because an adult is who did it, right? Like,
why was this okay?
Some other stuff going on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's some other stuff going on there that I can look back now. At the time, I thought I was because it was cool and mature. Clearly, that's why adults wanted to hang out with me at 14. But again, like, I need to process the like, what was all of that about in therapy? And, you know, I went to see a tattoo artist recently because I would like a tattoo over it. And she was like, yeah, I've heard that before. That's not crazy. Like, she didn't need to know, like, you know, she's like, you don't have hepatitis. You've like gotten checked out for that. I'm like, yep, she's a good, like, we'll put a tattoo over it. Nice. So I think I had more anxiety about having to go tell her about my like prison tattoo than she had about like, she's like, eh, it's kind of like a poke in. And I had someone else tell me like, I would just take that as this is similar if I was going to cover a like poke in, what is that called? Poke tattoo, poke and squeak tattoo.
Yeah. I don't know what it's called, but that's, those are like tribal ones when they're doing the little dots. On
yes. The yeah. That's like a style. And I recently like was with someone who's getting a tattoo like that. And I remember thinking like, oh, that's kind of like the same process of the one I have. So she was like, no, I'm not too worried about it. I'm glad you don't have hepatitis. That's usually our main concern because you probably didn't get a clean needle, which probably I didn't. I don't know.
Right. You have no idea.
14. I had no idea. Get a tattoo. That was kind of cool.
It was in the kitchen, you said.
The bathroom floor,
actually. Mine wasn't a clean needle.
Yours was also not a clean
needle. No, mine was.
It didn't come out. I think she asked me, she's like, did it come out of a package? And I was like, I don't remember that part.
Mine did.
Probably
not.
Because like, she showed me her setup.
The first well, then Mel, the person after you did not get a clean needle.
Because I got the one out of the back. So don't you worry. Well, bam. Well, and that's probably
But I think, like, again, when I had someone come to me and like talk to about it, I used my own example to explain, like, I could understand why. But in the end, like, the tattoo artist, like, she didn't care.
She doesn't care. The plastic surgeon doesn't care. They just need certain information to make sure it's safe for them to like go in and do whatever they need to do, right, Dr. Bates? That's really a safety thing.
Exactly. We want the information that's going to help us do our job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not for judgment. And I think that, like, we have a whole thing with doctors. We automatically think all doctors are judging us. And I don't know where this comes from. Like, there's got to be an origin from it. Yeah, but
I think if you're already in a larger body and you've had negative experiences with doctors assuming that you're stupid and you should just eat less and exercise more and the solution is very simple, you're just not doing it, I could understand why then maybe you carry some of that into, you know,
And I think, unfortunately, there are doctors like that. That's what I said earlier. You know, some people might judge and might make comments and might ask questions that or make statements that aren't necessary or judgmental. But I think that's your red flag to find someone else.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, I would imagine that sometimes, like, if a surgeon has never seen this, they may want you to go away, but not make it about them.
Mm.
So if I've never seen that before, this happens in therapists sometimes. I've never seen it before and I don't really want to treat it, but I want you to fire me. Like, I just want you to go away instead of me being like, I have to tell you, like, I've never treated that before and I have no idea what to do. So I can imagine there's some surgeons that subconsciously are like, I don't want to deal with that. So like, well, that was a stupid idea that you went and got it and then hoping that you'll go away so they don't have to treat something they've never seen before.
Oh, that's fair.
Do you agree with that, Dr. Bates?
I don't know. I mean, I've certainly never done that. I'll tell a patient, like, I can't help you or you need to find someone else. But I suppose I don't think that's what most surgeons think, though. I think some people just don't think before they speak, I think, and surgeons aren't excluded from that statement. So,
No, because, like, when I had my leg surgery, that was the one thing I actually respected the doctors because the one in Salem, actually two doctors in Salem wouldn't touch my leg. They were like, I've never have done a spiral fracture from knee down, so I don't want to touch it. They're like, nope.
And that, I think that's, I mean, hopefully they didn't like say anything judgmental, but they were like, it's just being honest, right? Like, I've never done this. You should find someone else.
Yep. And they even did a round table with other surgeons and got me to the right one. But like, they were saying like the main surgeon that did mine actually did a rod and what could have been an actual plate all the way up my leg because other surgeons wanted to do it that way. So it's like, it's really important to just listen to your guys' surgeons, no matter really what you're getting done. But when it comes to plastics, it's like, this is your own money. Like, make sure you like, one, you gel with the surgeon and like go over all the questions. And now we know from all of these episodes, it's one consultation to have all of your questions answered. And then you see the surgeon on day of surgery. So, you know, just make sure that you have that list ready to go. Is there anything you guys want to add about illegal injections, or do we cover all the things you guys wanted to cover?
Nothing to add specifically about that. I would just say, I think, and Mel, you may have just kind of highlighted it, but just ask all the questions, right? This is your body, your consult. Like you just said, it's your money when it comes to plastic surgery. But I think in general, as a patient, advocate for yourself, ask the questions.
I think I just want to confirm again that, like, do not allow shame and guilt. We talked about this a number of times, I think, at this point, too, like, to prevent you from getting treatment.
Yeah.
So don't allow that to prevent you from seeking out care, or feel like it's my own fault. I have to live with this pain because I made a stupid decision and I don't deserve. I think there's other layers of that too, from a psychological standpoint. I don't deserve care because I made this mistake that was stupid. So still seek out care. You are deserving of care. You are deserving of living without that pain if it can be corrected. And you actually still deserve to have a body that doesn't look disformed, even if you potentially caused it. Like, you still deserve to, if we can fix it, to have a body that feels more normal.
I'm comfortable. Like, guys, we only get one body, so let's just try to be as comfortable as possible. That's kind of where I've gotten older, it's been more about function over fashion. It's more like, I need to just be comfortable every day, because at 300 pounds, I was so uncomfortable and sweaty and icky and just anxious all the time. So it's like, that's the goal. So if that's getting injections done for filler, if that's getting plastic surgery, like, I'm all for it. Just make sure you're doing it safely is the biggest deal. So, alrighty, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening to us. I hope you guys have a great week, and make sure you message us if you have any questions or any topics you want us to cover, because we can always dive more deeper into subjects. So let us know, and I hope you guys have a great week. Bye, y'alls.